I know I've said this before, but it really, truly is a beautiful day in this neighborhood. I could keep saying that all day, I think. Especially when I look out and see all the friends here that I've come to know over these past couple years, and see family here. It truly is a beautiful day in this neighborhood. This sermon topic today is something I've been thinking about for many years. My daughter Erin and I, when she was about five, really sat down and started watching Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood together, and it became a morning ritual for the two of us. And then later when Ian came along and was old enough to understand, we all sat together. When I was a kid, I don't know if I really watched the show. I don't really remember ever watching it, although I knew the different segments. I knew what was going on when I watched it later on, and I never really appreciated it until later, until I had kids, and I really started to watch it. And, you know, so many people tend to make fun of Fred Rogers. He's kind of the butt of many jokes. And when I really sat down to watch it, I was struck by the beauty and the simplicity of all the messages that he was trying to tell him. There was a definite message that flowed from show to show. There was a theme every week, and it all flowed together very beautifully. So I was thinking about putting together Fred Rogers' thought as a theology, not as a theology in the systematic way as we might talk about his, since he was a Presbyterian minister, we might talk about his views on Calvinism or his views on predestination. But what I want to talk about is larger issues, the bigger theological picture. And our intention today is to talk a little bit about two things that I think fit into his theology. And that is process and the liturgy of daily tasks and daily living. And probably the biggest theme for Mr. Rogers was love and affirmation. Just as a little background, Fred McFeely Rogers, that's right, his name was Fred McFeely Rogers. He was named after his maternal grandfather, whose name was Fred McFeely. And he used that name for one of his characters on his TV show, the beloved Mr. McFeely, the speedy delivery man, who was probably the epitome of his grandfather. Although his grandfather's name was Fred McFeely, they called him Ding Dong. So, you know, we all have little pet names for our grandparents, but I don't think I'd really rather be called Ding Dong, but I don't know. You might think about that, Ted, I don't know. So Fred McFeely Rogers was born in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, just east of Pittsburgh in 1928, which is a very good year, I think. I think my mother might agree with that. So, it's a small industrial town, which is also the home of Arnold Palmer and Rolling Rock Beer. He attended Rollins College in Florida and received a degree in music composition, but he had planned to attend the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. But while home on vacation, just before graduation, he happened to see TV. And he said, "I just hated it. I looked at these people on television throwing pies in each other's faces, and I thought, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go into television and see if I can make a difference." He announced that to his family, and they were flabbergasted and they said, "Well, you know nothing about television." And he said, "Well, I think I'd like to try it." And the rest is history. However, he stated that he did return to the seminary on his lunch breaks, which I'd like to know how he did that. That would be interesting. He was ordained to the Presbyterian ministry in 1963, and his charge was to minister to children through television. So one of the readings I talked about today was his theology professor, his seminary professor, Dr. Orr, talking about the young man who was not suited for parish ministry, but was still ministering in so many ways that he didn't realize. And I think that's what happened to Fred Rogers. He became more than just a minister to one parish. He became a minister to the entire nation, and the entire people that were able to receive his television program. So the first topic is process and the liturgy of daily living. Mr. Rogers' television show begins every day by inserting himself slowly and gently into our lives as he goes from the formal to the informal, by removing his suit and shoes, changing into more comfortable clothes, his sweater and his what I would call play shoes. In this way, he is showing us that he wants to engage in conversation. And he also does it in a way that makes each person watching feel as if he's speaking just to them. I always got the impression, as an adult watching this show, that he was talking just to me. There is a theme for every week, which is brought out subtly with each segment of the show. It's not overt, it's very subtle, and it builds upon each other all week long. Most of all, what he shows are people engaged in everyday work. They are creating, planning, doing what they do to make the world what it is. He never distinguishes from the person that bags groceries to the pediatrician who takes care of the neighborhood children. Everyone in his neighborhood contributes to the well-being of everyone else. And in so doing, they create this sacred bond of community. It is a human endeavor not ordained by the divine, but freely given by everyone who contributes. In some religious communities, this might be the definition of sacrament. Freely given, a sign of the presence of something that holds us all together. Some would call God, others the human spirit. Fred Rogers always stresses that human beings can accomplish anything that they set their mind to. But he also makes it known that we must invest ourselves in growing and learning, that nothing is automatic, that everything must be worked for. There's another song that kind of summarizes this best. When he says, you can make it believe it happens. You can make believe it happens. Or pretend that something's true. You can wish or hope or contemplate a thing you'd like to do. But until you start to do it, you will never see it through. Because the make-believing pretending just won't do it for you. You've got to do it. But as you see over and over in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, things, material things, are not the issue with Fred. He never places value in things over people, never places value in things that people accumulate. Our worth is not dependent on how much stuff that we have, but on how we use the resources we have and to be the most creative with it. I think he values creativity more than anything. Another song, he says, it's you I like, it's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair, but it's you I like. The way you are right now, the way down deep inside you. Not the things that hide you, not your toys, they're just beside you. So much of our modern culture, which is led by television, I think, tells people the opposite, that things are important, not people. Fred also wrote that the older I get, the more I come to understand the things we possess can never bring us ultimate happiness. Contrary to what's implied in commercials, nothing we buy can ever take away our loneliness or fill our emptiness or heal our brokenness. You know yourself way down deep inside that what really matters is how we live this life with our neighbors, those who happen to be with us at that moment. That's really all that matters. Most episodes of the television show, Mr. McFeely brings a movie to show how people make things. Everything from erasers to bass violins. This is probably one of the things that fascinated me most, to see how these different things were made. Fred always remarks how much care each worker puts into what he does, as if every job is a vocation, something that touches everyone's life in some way. Things become an extension of who people are and what they share with the community. Fred and Mr. McFeely also make frequent trips to factories, aquariums, and zoos, and they go to many artists' workshops. Everyone he visits, he always asks, have you always wanted to be whatever that career is since you were a little girl or a little boy? He always asks that of every person. I think the message is to children, dream all the possibilities. Do what your heart tells you. Your destiny lies inside you. Waiting to emerge in beautiful ways, every job is sacred, no matter the skill level. And the biggest theme, I think, of all of Mr. Rogers is love and affirmation. Fred makes the point over and over again that each of us, in order to love and to be loved, must come to terms with what we feel inside and how we view ourselves as a whole person. His theology is grounded in realistic psychology of the human spirit. One that stresses that each of us has a value and we all must come to terms with what's in ourselves. We cannot be pushed, cajoled, or made to feel guilty in order to do something. There is no theological value in guilt. Only by reaching within can we find the divine inside each of us, and then we can reach out to the world and make the divine a reality in this world. This, to me, is the supreme theological message of Fred Rogers on each and every show. And you're probably thinking, that's exactly what every child thinks when they watch that show, right? Those deep thoughts. No, but as usual, Fred Rogers in his childlike way conveys these deep psychological, theological meanings in very simple terms. He has the innate sense of how to communicate to children to reassure them that it's okay to have feelings. It's okay to express anger. It's okay to express hurt and pain. But his message over and over again is that children need to express themselves in constructive ways by playing music, going outside to play, or simply talking to a loved one. Oh, the problems that we could fix if we only talked and communicated to one another. He often told the story of witnessing his own father crying at the funeral of his father, and that reassured him that it was okay for men to cry, and in turn he did the same for his sons. How many times are we bombarded in today's world with the macho message that it's not manly to cry? Or better yet, it's not manly to have feelings or to express feelings. Fred Rogers often conveyed these messages to children through puppets in the land of make-believe. Each puppet had a different personality, and often they were different aspects of Fred's personality. Often the puppets would change and grow as lessons were learned. He also always said the secret to getting children to listen to the puppets was learning to have them react with real people. If you had real live people reacting and acting with these puppets, then children would see that as not totally make-believe, but they would understand the message that was being tried to convey. And that way, children know the reality is a meaning of what's being said and not just some make-believe story with no relevance. Often the obvious sentimentality and use of feelings have evoked scorn and ridicule, mainly by those who value control and toughness. A TV critic for the magazine The National Review once wrote an article critical of Fred entitled Gone with the Wimp. He derided Fred's sentimentality and his apparent womanliness. This is the word that he used. Just think what a different world we would have if the macho-ness in today's world were replaced by a little womanliness. We might actually value each other as human beings, and that's certainly a theological value. I wanted to read a short quote from Carol Gilligan on this topic. She said, "Women not only define themselves in a context of human relationships, but also judge themselves in terms of their ability to care. Women's place in man's life cycle has been that of nurturer, caretaker, and helpmate, the weaver of those networks of relationships on which she in turn relies. But while women have thus taken care of men, men have in their theories of psychological development, as in their economic arrangements, tended to assume or devalue that care. When the focus on individuation and individual achievement extends into adulthood and maturity is equated with personal autonomy, concern with relationships appears as a weakness of women rather than as a human strength." It seems that Fred Rogers would like to make women of us all. And wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? What is the most common insult that boys hurl at each other? "You throw like a girl." You ever heard that expression? What would our world be like if our main desire was to build relationships, and would certainly be a threat to those who desire power and the accumulation of more and more power, such as the writer of that National Review article. Over and over again, Fred's message is unconditional love, because everyone has value. When I was thinking of this sermon and thinking about Fred and his unconditional love, and thinking about it, the context in our church and how we value welcoming and value all people, and thinking about how Fred was a Presbyterian minister, I wondered to myself, would he be accepting of all people? Would he be accepting of people who are gay or bisexual or lesbian or transgender. And I really couldn't find an answer to that in any books. But I have to tell you, I found the answer to that. During Midwest Leadership School that I attended in the past week, I was talking with a friend of mine there, and he told me a wonderful story that I'll share with you now. A friend of his, whose name was Susan, grew up in Fred's neighborhood and went to church with him many years. Fred Rogers was her Sunday school teacher. Eventually, she moved away, was living in Chicago, and came back to Pittsburgh for a visit. But she was reluctant to go to church and bring her new girlfriend with her. She wondered what Fred Rogers' reaction would be. So they actually went to church, but she kind of avoided Fred. And after a while, he came over and he said, "Susan, I'm very disappointed in you." And she was crushed. She thought, "Oh no, what have I done now?" And he said, "I'm disappointed because you didn't think enough of me to introduce your girlfriend to me. Didn't you know that I would love her as much as you love her? That I would be accepting of her as you accept her?" So I think that answered my question there. I'd like to close with reading from a book that I just gotten out too long ago. It's about a writer in Fort Worth, Texas, who established a long-term relationship with Fred Rogers, and it's called I'm Proud of You. Fred actually helped, the writer's name is Tim Madigan. He helped him through many, many trying times in his life and was always there for him. And it's amazing to me how a person like Fred Rogers, if you wrote an email to him, a letter to him, that he would always respond, and he was your friend for life from that point on. On February 28, 2003, the day after Fred's death from stomach cancer at age 74, I published an essay in the Star-Telegram describing our unlikely friendship. For the next several days, I was inundated with hundreds of letters, emails, and telephone messages from newspaper readers eager to share their own memories and the impact his long-running children's program had on their lives. Scores of young adults wrote of the sense of security they felt growing up with him, of learning from Mr. Rogers about their own value and what it meant to love. Parents wrote of entrusting their children to Mr. Rogers for a half an hour each day, the kindly, wise, civilizing influence in a world increasingly bereft of kindness, wisdom, and civility. And I answered those messages. I was pleased to assure them, the readers, that Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers were indeed one and the same. As an aside, over and over again in the interviews and different people that I read, always said the same thing. Fred Rogers was the same person you saw on TV as he was in real life. There was never a change. There was never any difference between the two. They were one and the same. But I also told them that, in my opinion, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood revealed only a fraction of his human greatness. Knowing him from television alone, it was tempting to see him as a man who might actually live in the neighborhood of make-believe, a popular segment of the show, a person of epic goodness, no doubt, but also a man of innocence and naivete, who as a result might be little acquainted with the grittiness realities of life. Though his program dealt unflinchingly with issues like divorce and death and violence, it was that seeming innocence that made Fred Rogers such an inviting target for satire. There was innocence about Fred in person, to be sure. He could be quaint, such as when he referred to me as my dear. He was a vegetarian who would never eat anything who had a mother. He wore a goofy-looking swimming cap and goggles for his daily morning swim. He forever carried a camera and always pulled it out to take pictures of people that he had just met for the first time. But he was also a man fully of this world, deeply aware of and engaged in the difficulties, speaking often of death, disease, divorce, addiction, and cruelty and the agonies those things wrought on people that he loved. He worked very hard, a lifelong student of children and child development who agonized over every word and gesture in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. "I feel such a responsibility to do my best for children," he once told me before he sat down to tackle each new script. He was a firm taskmaster on the Mr. Rogers set, especially if things were not quite to his satisfaction. An ordained Presbyterian minister, he devoured books by the great spiritual writers and was constantly preoccupied with spiritual questions. He rose before 6 each morning to pray for dozens of people by name. He was perhaps the most intelligent person I ever knew. But in my mind, something was at the heart of his greatness. It was his unique capacity for a relationship. What Esquire magazine writer Tom Junod once wrote and called fearlessness, an unashamed insistence on intimacy. That was true with almost every person he met, be it television's Katie Couric, or New York City cab driver, the Dalai Lama, or the fellow handing out towels at the health club where Fred went to swim. Fred wanted to know the truth of your life, the nature of your insides, and had room enough to be in his own spirit to embrace without judgment whatever that truth might be. I'm proud to say that I think I knew Fred Rogers, although he didn't know me, I think I knew him. And the world is always a better place with people like Fred Rogers, and I think that that's the message of today is let's take his message of love, of unconditional love, an affirmation for everyone's spirit and everyone's worth, carry that out into the world.